Good morning. I'm your host, Claudia Shambaugh, welcoming you to the January 27, 2015 edition of Ask a Leader. Today, the world recognizes the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz and other concentration camps. We don't have the luxury of pronouncing that horror a distant one. We are witnesses to horrors in our time. Pick your continent, pick your mode of slaughter. Just because it is not in our immediate sphere does not exonerate us from the havoc we wreak with the choices we make in our comfortable surroundings, whether we dare to be informed and whether we become sufficiently disturbed to seek out how we can get involved. Okay, the segue to my first guest is not that far-fetched. We're very fortunate to have back on the show Napoleon Gomez Urrutia, General Secretary of the Mexican National Union of Mine, Metal, and Steel Workers. Now a Canadian citizen, Mr. Gomez continues to speak as a leading North American labor organizer in solidarity with labor movements around the world. Developments in Mexico and beyond, rarely covered, are covered on this show. Also appearing later will be UCI student and president of Anteaters for Autism, Pyle Shaw, to introduce her organization in advance of its February 8th event, Social for Adults with Autism and Their Caregivers. Details in that interview later. Well, all right, folks, don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. My first guest is Napoleon Gomez Urrutia, General Secretary of Mexico's National Union of Mine, Metal, and Steel Workers, Los Mineros. He is as well a member of the Executive Committee of Industrial Global Union, a new, recently still new, federation representing 50 million union members in 140 countries. And if there's an update on those numbers, I'm happy to take them. He's been unanimously reelected by the National Assembly of the National Union of Mine and Metallurgical Workers, Los Mineros, six times as he's been residing in Vancouver there. A man of his word who has faced many threats, but who has remained in the thick of organizing. I wanted him back today to talk about recent successes, as well as address the ongoing matter of developments in dissent and the issue of accounting for so many whom have disappeared in his motherland. Welcome back to Ask a Leader, Napoleon Gomez Urrutia.
Thank you very much, Claudia. Gracias, muchas gracias. It's a pleasure to be here in your program again. And I think there are many new developments that have happened in Mexico in the last few months or a year, and it's important that we make comment about those today.
We'll do that, and we're mindful that it's a delicate operation because you are in the process of negotiating a return, not just leaving the Canadian borders, but we'll talk about that later, actually returning to Mexico. Well, first, let's start from the very general aspect. Let's take up where we left off nearly 2 years ago when we vowed to cover the broader scope and trends in the labor movement. You've been very active with unions around the world and paid several of them some breakthrough visits, the Edinburgh delegation, the Russian, the Australian, the National Union of Mine Workers in South Africa. Tell us about how you are building solidarity with movements of oppressed groups internationally.
Yes, thank you, Claudia. Yes, I've been participating very actively in the international labor movement. I'm a member of the Executive Committee of Industriol, this global organization with more than 50 million members of more than 140 countries. And we also have strategic alliances with many other international unions, like the United Steelworkers from North America, the United States and Canada, also in Australia, as you mentioned. So we have been very actively participating in solidarity, because they know that we have you know, we are to are protecting and fighting to defend and protect workers' rights and the freedom of association. So for us, union democracy and freedom is a very important issues, same as the working conditions that we have been working hard in order to improve them and prevent that tragedies in the mine or in the steel facilities happen. So we have been very active, and unfortunately we have received a very important response from most of the international trade unions and the leaders. And so it's been a terrible and important experience to us that has created a lot of commitments and solidarity. So I've been working very hard together with them internationally and in Mexico too, of course.
And your activities, your charter, it's not simply just improving benefits for workers. You see it broadly, as you just published in an editorial, I think is in La Jornada, that you are. It's a much broader scope as far as a redistribution of the wealth that has become concentrated with such a small percent.
Yeah, that is correct, Chloe. One of the main objectives, of course, is to increase wages and benefits. And we have achieved during the last 8 to 9 years the highest wage increases in Mexico, 3 and 4 times above the average, the national average of the rest of the unions. And we have been fighting for equality. And the world today is facing serious problems of inequality and income distribution against the poor people and the working class and middle classes. So we have been proposing and suggesting on my articles that I write in La Jornada, which is the most democratic and liberal newspaper in Mexico at the national level. And also, well, on my writings in my book or when I have a conference, that I'm fighting for and struggling to introduce a new model of social and economic development that we have called of shared prosperity among many other trade union leaders, in which, you know, we have to stop inequalities, the abuses, the corruption and exploitation that happen in many countries and in many industries, and against many companies and multinational companies. So we are fortunate, we are having a big response and unifying efforts in order to achieve this new model of economic, as we have called shared prosperity.
So again, the name of that charter, that title, share of prosperity, or there's another word in there?
No, it's a shared prosperity.
That's
it's
it.
A model of shared prosperity.
Shared prosperity.
So
we
have to stop inequalities. We have to have a more fair society in which income distribution is in favor of the vast majority of the people, not against, as it has been in the last few years. And also to have an active participation of workers in the and I think society in general, in democracy and in freedom, and their opinions to be listened. So we have been working hard on that. We have a very precise ideas on what, how to do it, and how to achieve this new model of economic and social development. So this has been a way also of keeping united the international labor movement and working in solidarity, because this is inequality is a problem that we're facing today all over the world.
And Napoleon, you made a passing reference. I want to make sure listeners know it was published about 2 years ago, your book, Collapse of Dignity, The Story of a Mining Tragedy and the Fight Against Greed and Corruption in Mexico. It's still extremely topical. It is important for readers to get a look at this so that they understand what's at stake, what's in play, and why you are where you are located at this point. So it was published by Ben Bella Publishers, yeah. And so I want for folks to know about that. For those of you who've just joined us, you're tuned to Ask a Leader on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, where my guest is Napoleon Gomez, General Secretary of the Mexican National Union of Mine, Metal, and Steel Workers, and he comes to us today from Vancouver, British Columbia. Well, at the previous interview you did with us in April 2013, you've been cleared by both the Mexican and Canadian courts of any charges lodged against you. And then I think it was just days after that interview that the Interpol removed the outstanding red notice that compelled you to remain indefinitely in Canada. So that it was pretty, I didn't know we were on that close to that being resolved.
Yeah. Let me tell you, just before I mention this, a little bit about my book, Collapse of Dignity.
Yes, of course.
It was published in 2013, and I'm very proud and honored to have that the book became a New York Times bestseller. He's in the list of the New York Times bestseller list, and also in the USA Today. It has been published in English, in Spanish, in French, and it may be published in German and Russian this year. But anyway, so it's a book which, shows how corruption is created, how the system is changed in favor of a few. But it reflects our struggle for many years against injustice and political persecution and abuses of power. So now, what you mentioned is the charges were completely dropped by the false accusations they raised against me as part of this political persecution on the 28th of August by the Supreme Court of Justice of Mexico through the Fourth Tribunal. And it was a unanimous decision by the tribunal in which they consider unconstitutional all these charges. So, I was, during more than 8 years being politically persecuted without no reason, and it was just false accusations. So it was very important, and also, of course, Interpol canceled the red alert immediately, and they gave me a document, which I'm very also proud of that, because according to our lawyers and the legal defense team, they haven't seen a document like this one, in which they say Mexico, the government of Mexico, used false documents and information that doesn't compel with the rules of Interpol, so they canceled that, and it was a clear political persecution. So it's a really very good document, and this became almost the same time last year, a little bit after Canada also grant me the citizenship on the 30th of June 2014. And so the accusations were dropped on the 28th of August 2014 by the Supreme Court of Justice. And Interpol also canceled everything. So that was really a very important victory, because usually with all these abuses of power that are committed in countries like Mexico, things become very terrible, and against union leaders, against social organizers, and people who are active in politics and in trade unionism. So it was a big victory for us and for all the members of our union, and I think for all the international labor movement, because they have been very closely working with us in solidarity.
So I guess one can say that you not only have papers, but you have papers with unconditional imprimaturs of acceptance and integrity. And so this is going to give you lots of leverage as you continue to negotiate with the Mexican government about your return. Well, that is remarkable. So, and you mentioned you've become a citizen now. So this has made for you, travel had been very difficult. Your wife was in the U.S. and in other countries accepting awards on your behalf, so you were missing out on all of that. So Stephen Hunt, the director of the United Steelworkers out of Vancouver, British Columbia, he's attested to the breath-holding as you made your first trip back to the U.S. when you went to finally pick up your award on your own behalf in Philadelphia last December. Can you tell us about how that went, how it felt last December on the occasion of you coming into the U.S.? Through Toronto and out of Buffalo.
Steve Hunt is a good friend of mine, and very good friend, and he has been working with us, really in solidarity. He provided me with all the support while I've been in Vancouver, and all the staff of the United Steelworkers, and the National Director Ken Newman, and the International President Leo Girard, and all of them. And I attended because after all these resolutions, then I was free to travel, and I attended the International Board of Directors meetings in Pittsburgh in December. And I got my, even if as with my dual citizenship, I didn't have a need of a U.S. visa, but still I got my U.S. visa on the Mexican passport, and then but I traveled with my Canadian passport as well, and it was really very high welcome, very warm welcome. I was very, very happy. My wife was with me, and really we were very emotional because of the strong and committed solidarity that the United Steelworkers has shown to our struggle has been fantastic since the beginning. Well, so I'm very grateful to them. And also my wife attended different ceremonies in which I received the award, for instance, in Norway, in Oslo. I was awarded with the international, very prestigious award on labor rights and human rights, and I couldn't attend at that time because it was May of 2014. I was still under the terrible for persecution and the red alert of Interpol. So she attended that. She attended in Washington, D.C., also the Minnie Kirkland Award on human rights to receive this award on my behalf, and from the AFL and CIO, and many other international and national also awards that I have received, particularly during 2014 and 13. So it's been amazing that I could travel in December to the United States and to Pittsburgh after 8 years or almost 9 years of not being able to be there. And so now I'm planning, of course, this year to participate more actively in all the international meetings and conferences that are celebrated all over the world. This is part of my responsibility, the same as the past president of the Mine, Metal and Steelworkers Union of Mexico. So I will be participating very actively during this year in all of these meetings.
Well, I just want to say, just to give a little dramatic tension to the interview, though, according to Stephen Hunt, though, it wasn't a self-evident proposition that things were going to go smoothly going in and coming back out again over the American Canadian-American border. So you're being super dignified, but apparently, though, you weren't sure when it looked like there was a slightly different protocol for his going through the customs, and then you had an additional question, but it all sort of melted into a very respectful reception that they gave you. Welcome, Mr. Gomez, into the country, and that kind of a thing. So I didn't know if you wanted to say a little bit about that, and then on your way back out, that there was still a little bit of a uncertainty about leaving the country, and it all went incredibly well, and more than just routine, but respectfully, a respectful overlay of their handling of your being processed over the border.
Yes, in fact, we traveled together, Steve Hunt and my wife, Aurelia, and myself, to Pittsburgh. And of course, we went through Toronto and then Pittsburgh. But when we were in the immigration, of course, my wife was a little bit tense, and of course, it was natural. I mean, it was the first time in more than 8 years of traveling abroad, and particularly to the United States. So, but when we have a very nice welcome, to our surprise, even when our passport was stamped by the official of immigration, we were walking towards the end, and then two tall, in uniform officials from immigration, there were two standing by, and then when we were just passing by, they asked me, Mr. Gomez, and they said, yes, welcome to the United States of America. Enjoy your stay.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, I was really amazed and surprised. And, of course, I said, thank you very much. And then we continue. And so it was really nice. So when I arrived to the board of directors, I mean, the speech of the Leo Girard, international president, was really so, I mean, full of energy.
Right.
And some of them say, you know, sometimes we are questioned about things. And Napoleon, after 8 years, he was welcomely received by the immigration officials. So I was really very happy that it happened after so many time and all this tremendous political persecution and attacks and threats that we receive along all these years, just to fight and defend labor rights and human rights. This is amazing that today, in the 21st century, we still have governments and companies that they act in complicity to persecute union leaders, social leaders, without no grounds and just abusing of their power. But unfortunately, we succeed in this, and everybody, I think, is very happy, and it gave a boost to the energy of all of the international solidarity, because
yes,
it was a clear example that, if you work hard, if you are consistent, you are committed, you work with honesty, with intelligence, you can defeat your enemies. Whatever is their power, if you are right, if you have your principles and values, and you are an honest person, and as I have proved all my life, then, you can defeat them, and it pays back that finally you are recognized in such a way like it happened in December. So it was really dramatic, intense, when we were crossing, but at the same time was very, the immigration zone, but after that was really very relaxing and happiness, yeah.
And this on the not the heels, but you had already the situation where Juan Linares, the Los Mineros National Executive Member, who was imprisoned without ever being charged when he had returned to Mexico in 2008, so without charge. So what did it take him to be released finally?
Yes, my colleague Juan Linares, he was in prison for no reason, like a political prisoner of the government of Felipe Calderón, the right-wing party, and he was for 2 years, 2 months, and 20 days in prison, without no right to a fair trial, without no right to bail, and just as a political prisoner to put pressure on me to give up our struggle and to put pressure on the union. So what we did is we present some lawsuits against this was being promoted by the president of Grupo Mexico, a multinational company, which is, by the way, one of the nastiest companies in the world. It's considered internationally as one of the 10 most non-ethical companies in the world today. So they persecute Juan Linares and ourselves, but we present lawsuits against the president, Germán Larrea, and then he was called for a cross-interrogation process by the judges 20 times. He evaded during all those 20 times he had to go and be cross-interrogated. But finally, on the 21st, we succeed, and he was called because there was a warrant arrest against him. He didn't show up, so he had to go. And then he moved his lawyers in order to refuse to abstain from the accusations he was making against Juan Linares. So he was liberated. He desisted of what he was doing against him. But we had to go through all this process, which took 2 years at least. 20 times he was called for a hearing on this interrogation, and he never attended with excuses. He was abroad, he was ill, whatever his lawyers present. It's terrible that the way corruption acts and the pressure on some judges that unfortunately they receive economic or political pressures. There are some very honest judges, of course, in Mexico, but some others are not, and corrupted, and unfortunately they use these ones to attack our colleagues, like it was the case of Juan Linares. But finally we liberate Juan Linares through all this counterattack campaign of lawsuits against the president of the company Grupo Mexico.
So with this international profile that you have, with these victories that you have scored, as it were, then what can I know it's a, as I mentioned earlier, it's a delicate negotiation that you're involved with now with the Mexican federal government, under which you're trying to guarantee a safe return to Mexico. What is it that can you tell us that you are asking for them to guarantee?
Yes, well, I got this exoneration, complete and full exoneration, unanimous decision. Also, legally, there is nothing, no charges, nothing against me. But politically, we know how the system works in Mexico. So what we are demanding from the government is respect to my integrity, my freedom, and give enough guarantees that I can return back to continue presiding the union in Mexico, and for my family too. So if I got the legal exoneration now, I don't want to have any, to have a political exoneration too, because as I said, the system works sometimes in favor of the most powerful people and the corruption. So I try to prevent this, and the government can guarantee that if they want to. So we've been in negotiations with them, and I hope that we will succeed soon. At least from that point of view, this new government of Enrique Peña Nieto has been more open than the two previous ones.
I mean,
they initiated this attack against the democracy and freedom of our union and the union leaders. I hope that this government will respond soon, because I could be in Mexico right now legally, but politically, you don't know. They can move. You know, whatever, I put pressure on, as I said, on judges that are not very honest and start a different to a new process, that it would be a perverted action from them. So we have to be very careful after all these 8.5 years of political persecution against me, that everything is clear and the government agrees. So we've been in touch with them and having negotiations through my colleagues and my legal counselors. So I hope that we will succeed this soon, and I'll be able to go back. The other important thing is that Mexico is in a very the insecurity in Mexico is dramatic. I mean, there are so many social problems of insecurity, and so we have to be very, very careful in order not to make a mistake after this big victory that the labor movement hadn't seen in many years. So we have to go very gradually and very intelligent and a legal strategy and political strategy in order for me to go back. But I hope that I will succeed very soon on this.
And you're negotiating with the federal government, but we know with the current disappearances of students, I want to talk about that in the time remaining, is that there are local jurisdictions that Nieto is sort of distancing himself from in terms of accountability. So I'm going to put it all in one big fell swoop here. Black Lives Matter here in Mexico, student dissidents, whole groups of them matter as well, but they are faring a similar fate. We're barely getting coverage of the students in Igalo, in Herrero State, but in my area, we've heard absolutely nothing about the students who were rounded up at their last day of school last July in nearby Cocula, that the French press has brought to the world's attention. One of the developments that demand a little time with you today, some of your attention is how to get the guarantee on the local level, the local jurisdictions. How are you addressing that now? I'm sure you are.
Yes. Yes. These are clear examples of what is happening in Mexico in terms of insecurity. The disappearance of all these students is a terrible tragedy. It's a shame for Mexico. The way they have disappeared, and the way the information is being misled, sometimes by the same authorities. A lot of people are in solidarity with all the parents and the families of these students. And this is not the only case. There have been some other cases. It was one before, a few weeks before that, one in the Estado de Mexico. It's just a neighbor state of Mexico City, in which 21 young people were also fired by the police forces. They were accused of being involved in the organized crime, but without not a trial, without anything, they were just really, like with the fire squad, they killed them, all of them. So there are a lot of social protests in Mexico because of all this insecurity. There are not guarantees. And this is important to us because it's a reference of what is happening there. And Mexico has to change. Mexico is a big country. It used to have lots of prestige in Latin America, in the world. But the image of Mexico has deteriorated completely in the last, I would say, few years, out of these problems with the organized crime and the drug dealers and the violence that is executed sometimes by the federal police forces, sometimes by local forces, even sometimes the army has been accused of that, of those abuses. So we have to work hard on how to change the future and the destiny of Mexico. Mexico cannot be a country in which you live on the basis of insecurity and this kind of mass killings and disappearance of people. So I hope that with our ideas, with our efforts, with our proposals, we can help in changing the image of Mexico and having a more better democracy and respect for human life and also workers' rights as well.
Well, it seems there's a real reason for concern with you can very well negotiate some terms, but on the local level, when you're dealing with the drug goons, they're not as mindful of the importance of an international labor leaders being protected like the way the federal government would be in trying to bring Mexico's profile back to a stellar one. This is a huge conundrum for you to get the guarantees all the way down to the local level with the local drug entrepreneurs, too. So you know more about all this than the rest of us, but I wish you well in being able to bring your leadership back to the local area with a guarantee, with some kind of accountability. It's hard to find on the local level.
Yeah, thank you very much, Claudia. Yeah, we have to work very hard on that at
yes.
the local level. And we have to be very careful about all this, violence and acts of violence and repression that we have seen in Mexico. And so we have to change this. Mexico needs a better future for the new generations, for society, for the working and middle classes.
Yes.
And so we will continue working hard on that, and I hope that we will succeed. And the government has to commit and make really changes, important changes in society.
Yes,
And create new opportunities in education, in the culture of Mexico. The culture has to change and create a much better idea and values and principles and moral principles for people. So this is what we will be continue working hard on that, and I hope that we can succeed and have these guarantees for me to return soon to Mexico.
Amen. So I want, as we close down, we'll just give it another minute here to wrap up. For example, people can perhaps be involved or know about, in February, is it not the annual Days of Action in consulates around the world to gain grassroots support for your work?
Yes, it is on the 19th of February. Yeah, this is because it's the anniversary of the tragedy of the coal mine of Paso de Conchos, where 65 miners died.
Yes.
It's a mine of Grupo Mexico, and they just abandoned our colleagues after 5 days of trying to rescue them. So 65 died, and 9 were seriously injured. They recovered later, but it took a long time. So it's the anniversary, and it will be a strong solidarity from all over the world, as in the last few years, they always show protest and acts against the government, because the bodies of our colleagues, of the 65, are still buried in the mine and abandoned at the bottom of the mine. So we will continue also fighting for to rescue the bodies and give them to the families and be buried with dignity and justice. So this is of interest that we have immediately also, and we will have this international solidarity from many unions and organizations from all over the world.
Sadly, that's all the time we have. Napoleon Gomez Urrutia, he is the author of Collapse of Dignity. He is With us today, the international leader, still the General Secretary of the Mexican National Union of Mine, Metal, and Steelworkers, here on Ask a Leader. I wish you all the success. We'll follow it. I'll put in my remarks for the program leading up to the February 19th, that this is where people can be building more awareness and look for opportunities to advance this cause, because it's an international reach, because there's mines everywhere. They're dangerous. It's dangerous and heady work, and that's why you have seen the oppression in the eyes of those that are rallying in South Africa, Australia, in Russia, and all over the world as you've organized with them. So it's February 19th is a day we can put on our calendars to write and hope we're helping institutionalize safety all the way down to the local level. Napoleon Gomez Urrutia, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
On the contrary, Claudia, thank you very much for the opportunity. It has been a pleasure. Thank you again for your solidarity and leaving open this program for me and to explain to what is happening in Mexico and what we're fighting for. And
yes,
I hope that we will succeed and I can return to Mexico soon. Thank you very
Amen.
Much. And I appreciate this opportunity so much.
All the best and all the safety. Thank you so much to you. Take care. And regards to the family.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after just a few minutes with the next guest. That's Payal Shah. She's the UCI undergrad with speaking as the president of And Ears for Autism. Don't go away.
Por nombre, sí, señor. Ciudad de Monterrey.
Welcome back to the show. Sometimes the best way to find out what's going on around Anteater campus is to visit the perimeter road when people are out there with their organizations, with their outreach. This is where you can find out about some amazing enterprises. One person, my guest next, is one of those very examples. My guest for this part of the hour is Payal Shah. Payal is president of Anteaters for Autism and a second-year biological sciences major here at UCI. She's the youngest in her family with two older brothers. Although born and raised in Southern California, Payal's extended family keeps her Indian roots alive. Welcome to Ask a Leader, Payal.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to have you on. Let's talk about first your own personal connection with autism, since most people with whom I'm familiar are involved caring for or have grown up with someone on the autistic spectrum.
I actually don't have a loved one who has autism. However, in high school, my English teacher would always talk about her son. She had a son who had autism and one who was typical, and she'd always tell us stories. And until then, I never really realized what autism was. And the constant differences I would see, the struggles, and at the same time, how much she enjoyed it and how much she wouldn't change it for anything, genuinely got me interested. And then my senior year of high school, I did an internship as an instructional aide in a classroom with preschoolers on the spectrum and other special needs. And I fell in love with the kids and the job itself, and just being around them, their innocence, their straightforwardness. It was a wonderful place to be, and I knew I wanted to do something more with that.
So, Payal, let's go back to the earliest encounters. That were you involved in some kind of child care for your teacher's offspring? Or
no, I wasn't involved in any child care. However, I did earlier during that time. I was a special sitter where some days on like Saturdays you'd go to I believe it was like a place in Irvine. I don't remember though, since it was a way
place
back.
For like occupational therapy or
not
social skills training.
Just a place where adults, you know, if they want a little break, they can drop their kids off and you spend the day with their kids, making sure they're safe, they eat properly, they enjoy themselves. And it's kind of like a daycare center.
Is it the regional center?
No, it's not the regional center. Okay. It was a few years back. That organization doesn't exist anymore, I don't think.
But this is a kind of a service that you can render. You can mention to listeners is a kind of a following, something that people could do for on retention or in volunteer capacity.
Right. So. There's actually a lot of people, not a lot, but I know a few people who are actually caregivers for, not caregivers, I mean, but
respite providers.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. And so then you said you did this, had this internship, and through whom was that?
It was through North Orange County SELPA.
And you want to spell that out?
Yeah. NOC SELPA. SELPA stands for Special Education Local Plan Area.
Okay. That's a good one. That's actually a new resource for me, too. So to what extent is the basis for your starting your group, and what would you consider the kind of charter to be? The Anteaters for Autism.
Right. So my reason for being part of the group is definitely everything, my previous experiences. For like 3.5 years, I think, on campus, there was Autism Speaks You. And then recently this year, we changed to Anteaters for Autism to focus more locally. And that's, we've been able to do a better job by doing that. We focus on raising awareness, volunteering, and fundraising as a club and organization to help the autism community in any way we can. And this year, we're trying to have a larger focus on helping everyone on the spectrum itself and all age groups, because we've realized that not adults aren't focused on as much. Most volunteering organizations help out, like Friday Night Club is with kids, Spirit League is with kids. So we're trying to not steer away from that, but also include the adults.
Okay, and you were talking about this sort of continuum. It's a sliding scale from high functioning to, sometimes the word is impacted. I don't know if that's the term, phrase that's still considered an enlightened phrase.
We usually
don't use
impacted.
That's gone.
We use more of, well, us personally as a club, are like the quote we stand by is like "different but not less" by Temple Grandin. And we kind of stand to believe that it's a spectrum. And if you've seen, it's like our advisor uses a good quote. It's different, but I'm not sorry. Autism is a borderless continuum. It truly is. If you've seen one case, you truly don't, like, you haven't seen all of them. You've only seen one. And there's so many perspectives to learn from. Like, for me personally, since I don't have a loved one with autism, I'm constantly asking my friends who have siblings or parents what they go through, what they think, what they believe, what researchers believe. Everyone's beliefs are different, and they come from different experiences and perspectives.
And maybe you've seen in your experience where the borders not only aren't there, but on the spectrum, a person might change with different developmental phases that they enter. That as with adolescence, that has a huge impact, and you've maybe witnessed that in your experience.
I haven't necessarily witnessed it because I haven't worked long enough with one person necessarily. Mm-hmm. But when I did my internship, I got the opportunity to talk to the teachers in the classroom. And they would tell me how, you know, just a few years ago, this child may not have talked at all. But the routines, the therapists that would come in, it constantly helped them show, like, give a little bit of improvement. Like, I think any little improvement is great for kids when they're younger.
Indeed. For those of you who've just joined us, you're tuned to Ask a Leader on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, streaming all kinds of clinical centers on the web at KUCI.org. My guest is Pyle Shaw. She's the president of the UCI's Anteaters for Autism. And we're talking about the whole continuum of the autistic spectrum and where she's been involved with that, and the focus of the Anteaters for Autism being an adult autistic population. So this is an interesting public service. I consider this, that you're heightening the awareness to overcome the myth maybe some people have, that I've seen people harbor, that young individuals are going to outgrow their autism or move off of the spectrum. So how are you helping educate the general public about that with your organization?
So we're trying to help out right now. through this year, we've been focused on trying to get the UCI community, for the most part, to learn more about autism. Recently, a few weeks ago, we had a panel where we had speakers, including researchers, parents, and a special education teacher, where all the kids who were interested were able to come, and the speakers would tell about, you know, their journey about autism. And then at the end, we left it open to the attendees to ask questions. And I think that's one of the best ways, because if you listen and understand, and then you can find relevant questions and like what you're curious about. Because for me personally, constantly, no matter how much I learn about autism, there's always another question I have, or another idea, or just questions and like things I want to learn about. So I think that's what we've been doing so far. And we're still trying to branch out to the community in general. I think one of the ways is just the fact that we maybe hold fundraisers off campus, and maybe the people there would know about it. Just little things there is what we've been doing outside of the community right now.
So the panel that was on campus?
Yes.
And you already got that notice out. We're unfortunately not in a position to broadcast that opportunity, but we'll talk about other opportunities.
Right, of course.
So when you were talking about the UCI community was there, so you had largely who's coming? Students? People that are working with different groups?
I would say for the most part, attendees were students.
That was your target as well?
Well, target would be any, honestly, for anything that we do, it's usually like faculty or students, whoever is interested, to be completely honest.
Okay. And so are you reaching, publishing, and outreaching beyond the campus, or this is the pull?
For right now, just the campus, but we have an event coming up in February that will be open to different campuses and kind of out there.
Well, let's talk about that so our listeners know what they can look forward to and schedule on their calendars.
The event we have coming up is on Sunday, February 8th, Social for Adults with Autism and Their Caregivers. It's here on campus in the Student Center, Emerald Bay, A, B, C, D, and E. And parking is free in case anyone is worried about that. Basically, at the event, we have adults with autism who are there with their caregivers spending their time. The event itself is from 2 to 5. We ask volunteers to come from 1 to 5 p.m. for orientation from 1 to 2 p.m. Volunteers have the opportunity to host an adult and spend the day with them, make sure that they enjoy themselves, that they're, if they want to network with other people, you help them with that. Basically, just become friends with any person and take them on a nice day. There's different activities that you can spend time. If you're not comfortable with hosting an adult, you have other opportunities to volunteer, like other activities that we have, including dancing, singing, board games, crafts, and Wii games. So you have plenty of opportunities to volunteer. It's a wonderful opportunity if you want experience with adults on the spectrum and just to see three generations of people who are involved with autism. If you are interested in volunteering, you can email us at autismsocialuci@gmail.com.
Okay, we'll put that on the podcast summary too. So that's very good. And I noticed this is a large space that you've created, that you've rented out, reserved.
Yes.
And so that is where everybody's going to be all in the same area. And you've got set up in different stages
different stations, I guess.
Okay.
Within the room.
Mm-hmm. So sort of like motor, mental, cognitive kind of different activating kinds of activities around?
I think in essence, yes, but that wasn't really our focus. It was more the focus of the event is kind of to get adults to network with other adults if they want to. We're not forcing anyone to, but it's a good opportunity for them because I don't think they have that chance as much.
Yes, I think they're always looking. This is a very resourceful group that is always looking for additional resources.
Right.
I've seen how adults are very pragmatic with the sharing, pooling what they've learned with sometimes complete strangers. So I think they're all in, and I don't think there will be any barriers for we'll call it commiseration sharing, that kind of a thing. So people are starting to reserve now. Is there a deadline for reserving space so you know how many noses to count?
There isn't necessarily a deadline, but we would like to know ahead of time for adults who are RSVPing, and then for volunteers, just to get an idea of what we're expecting. But of course, there are this is an event that's held at CSU, Cal State Fullerton, and Chapman. So previously at Cal State Fullerton, there would be people walking in, but they're always more than welcome. We don't turn anyone away. But it's always good to know ahead of time to know what to expect and prepare for.
So there's a template that you've taken from those other campuses? That,
yes.
Okay, well, that's right. And so you've attended those before?
I attended the Cal State Fullerton one recently. Other than that, I hadn't.
Okay, okay. That's one event plan. That's the
right.
purpose for having you on today.
Uh-huh.
How about, are there any particular other activities that people can count on later in this academic year, calendar?
Of course. Well, generally speaking, if anyone's ever interested, we welcome people to come to our general meetings that are held every Monday this quarter.
Monday? Okay.
Yes, unless there's a holiday, of course. But it's held every Monday in Humanities Hall 143.
Okay.
And we also have a Facebook group, Anteaters for Autism 2014-2015, where people are welcome to join. But so that's another way to get involved. And additionally, during the first week of spring quarter, where the week where I believe Wednesday or Thursday is National Autism Awareness Day, we'll be boothing the whole week and giving out free stuff. So people are welcome to talk to us that week as well. We booth usually and then give out free stuff, maybe have like a photo booth one day, do a variety of activities. And then sometime early spring quarter as well, we plan to have a benefit show to raise funds for scholarships for Karate for All and Spirit League for kids. Every Thursday we hold fundraisers and typically we'll sell boba, which most on-campus groups sell boba. We sell boba and sometimes baked goods or whatever else we do decide. But we're this whole quarter we're boothing near BS3. We're always welcoming people to buy stuff, support us, or even come and ask us about our organization.
Pile, for those who don't know what BS3 means, give us a big fat landmark for some visitors that are going to
be on
the campus.
Yes, of course. Biological Sciences 3. It's near Ayala Library.
Okay.
Yes.
Very good. Wow. Just give yourself a pat on the back for being so scrappy to pull together so many things. Keep going.
Additionally, wow. In addition to fundraising for that, we want to fundraise for the Center for Autism. All these organizations do wonderful stuff for individuals on the spectrum, so it's good for us to help them out.
And we know that Dr. Jay Gargas is setting up a preeminent center here at UCI, and that is another prospect for you to reach out and collaborate, coalesce with what you've got there. I think he's waiting for your call. Okay, good. For those of you who've just joined us, my guest on Ask a Leader is Pyle Shaw. She's president of Anteaters for Autism, and you founded this when, Pyle?
I wouldn't say I founded it, because I was part of it last year when it was Autism Speaks You. And then the board and committee last year, together we decided that we should change it. And then I wanted to become a leader and a bigger part of the organization, so I ran for president, and that's kind of how this happened. But I wouldn't say I founded it.
And so when you say Autism Speaks You, just in case anybody wants to make notes, is that you like university or you the second person?
No, it's you like university.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've got that on the calendar. I think the Autism Awareness Day falls somewhere around the third or fourth week in April or something like that.
It's actually the first week of, it's one of the first 2 days in April.
Early April.
Yes, right. It's very early.
So we'll stay tuned with that. And I'll try my best to post people on that upcoming day with my announcements as I close the shows. And I'd like to know, as you're creating following membership here, what can students contribute? How can they get involved? What kind of skills sets are you needing now to fill out the organization?
Honestly, it's not really, it's more, when I look for members, I don't really look for a skill set, but I look more for just their genuine interest in autism and just to learn more. They don't have to have any skill sets. They can learn them gradually. I know when I first got into the field, I didn't know anything. I was just very interested and genuinely curious about everything and willing to accept different ideas. And I think that's what I look for in a member, just genuine interest, and friendliness and willing to not be judgmental and take things as they come.
What might be the demographics for the club? I mean, in terms of gender, what the majors are of the students that are membering up?
Gender-wise, we mostly have females that are on our club. However, we would love to have males as well, but that's just how it has ended up right now.
Mm-hmm.
Although majors, there's a variety. Like personally right now, like on our board or committee, we have a crib major, a business economics major, we have bio majors, we have psychology majors, sociology. So we're kind of spread out everywhere.
Great.
Which is something I like as well, yeah.
Okay, very good. So we know we can get in touch with you on the Facebook page. We'll put all those up on the podcast summary. And you told us when you're meeting, is there, in addition, any other kind of takeaway you'd like for any listeners, community members, beyond?
Or
how maybe are you available for people who say, I need to set up this kind of organization in my area?
Yeah, of course.
What would you recommend to them besides reaching you now, through these organization platforms, formats? What might you suggest to them?
Aside from reaching out to me, I would recommend reaching out to different organizations like Family Autism Network or the Center for Autism, because I was able to, through this year, because of the event that I'm organizing in February.
Right.
I've had the opportunity to reach out to all of those organizations, and I've learned a lot from them. And I think that's where you get the most resources and most ideas and most, what to, the do's and don'ts.
Well, fine. Well, I really laud you for being so scrappy in your taking the opportunities on the way you are from what your earliest experience has been with developmentally impaired. We call them, there's neurotypical. I know when you talked about typical earlier, neurotypical and those on the autistic spectrum, how you've gotten involved and put yourself full in this capacity of growing this organization and giving this sort of under-recognized population of adult autistic individuals their due in realizing more fulfillment and joy in despite the impairments that they must reckon with.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on the show, Pyle, and good luck to you. This brings the show to a close. Next week, we'll devote the whole hour to the work of Dr. Virginia Kimonis, UCI professor with the Department of Pediatrics, UC Irvine Division of Genetics and Metabolism. She'll be joined by two patients to cover her breakthrough diagnostic tools and treatments for rare inherited neuromuscular disorders. Thanks for listening, everyone. Talk with you next week.